Yesterday, a U.S. federal judge ruled in favor of author J.K. Rowling and barred publication of the Harry Potter Lexicon. The book was to have been a guide to the characters, terminology, and locations in the best-selling books. The judge cited copyright infringement and said the lexicon borrowed too much of Rowling's creative work for its purposes as a reference guide and would cause her irreparable harm as a writer. So, how much material should follow-on writers be able to use without the original author's permission? If you have questions about this case or about how intellectual property works, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also weigh in on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now is Fred von Lohmann. He's a senior staff attorney with the online civil liberties group, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. He's with us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Nice to have you back on the program.
My pleasure, Neil.
And is this simple? Is this a simple matter of plagiarism?
No, it's really not. In fact, this case is a classic example of what we lawyers get paid to deal with, a so-called on the one hand, on the other hand kind of problem. And the judge was very careful in the ruling yesterday to point out that this particular lexicon, this reference guide, went a little too far. But the judge went out of his way to say, but other reference guides might be okay. In fact, I'll read just one line from the ruling where he says, the market for reference guides to the Harry Potter works is not exclusively J.K. Rowling's to exploit or license, no matter the commercial success attributable to the popularity of the original works. So he was trying to find a middle ground and said that this lexicon went a little too far.
So if you wanted to publish the unofficial guide to, the Weasleys, you could do that.
I think that's right. I think the ruling yesterday really is a roadmap to how not to take too much. The judge was troubled. There were a few things that really stood out in the ruling. One was J.K. Rowling, many of your listeners may not know this, has published not just the 7 famous Harry Potter books, but 2 much shorter 50-page guides, one about the history of Quidditch, the flying broomstick football game.
Kind of polo in the air, yep.
Exactly. And another one called Fantastic Beasts that's about all of the creatures of the series. And the judge was particularly troubled that the lexicon had taken too much from those companion works, which were themselves a little bit like reference guides. And so the court really felt that that really was a direct competitor for something Rowling had already written herself.
And was she planning to publish something similar to what this lexicon would have been?
Apparently she was, and she actually flew out to New York during the trial that took place in this case and had talked about her own encyclopedia that she's working on and had specifically said that she felt discouraged or would feel discouraged from writing that if she felt that works like the lexicon could hit the market before hers. The judge wasn't too terribly moved by that, but he did note that that was something that would be taken into consideration.
Well, wouldn't ordinarily she and her publishers simply, if the lexicon or something like it had come out, say, then publish the official guide?
Exactly. And I think that's what this what was on the judge's mind when he said, or when he, at least reading between the lines, didn't mean to say reference guides or encyclopedias are always off limits. But you have to, not take more than you really need.
But if I wanted to write a book called, Harry Potter and the Amazing Magic Radio, I'd be in trouble, wouldn't I? I mean, she owns the characters.
That's right, within limits. If you wanted to do a book that was maybe a parody of Harry Potter, making fun of Ms. Rowling or the Harry Potter universe, that might be a slightly different answer because obviously you wouldn't expect that she would authorize that kind of use. And there, sort of the fair use First Amendment principles might trump. But generally, you're right. If you want to do a straight-ahead sequel adopting the same characters and plot lines, that's something that the copyright owner usually has control over. The lexicon here, of course, was very different in that it was a reference guide, more like an encyclopedia to the universe rather than a sequel.
So we saw this play out. We've seen it play out. And one company has the rights, for example, to James Bond's novels, Ian Fleming long dead, and another has the rights to make James Bond movies. But they both have the rights to do that. And if somebody else tried to make a movie or somebody else tried to write a James Bond book, they would be in trouble.
That's right, although, as you point out, there have been plenty of legal fights on some of that ground as well. It's interesting, the judge here also mentioned that there might be a future market for the poems and songs that are in the Harry Potter books and some of these companion works. And that was another reason. So it's not just about sequels. It might also be things like, you know, taking the poetry and lyrics that are in the books and turning them into some future product as well.
Let's see if we get some listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We're talking with Fred Von Lohman, a senior staff attorney with the online civil liberties group, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And Joanna's with us calling from San Francisco.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. I was wondering why a lexicon or a guide wouldn't be protected as like literary commentary, and I was thinking particularly of all the lexicons and guides that are to Finnegan's Wake. Like why a guide to understanding?
Yeah, is there Cliff's Notes, for example?
Yeah, why a guide to? I mean, I don't know the book. I don't know what the specifics of the book in this case, but it just seems like a guide like that would fall like under something that you would be some kind of, you know, commentary or.
Mm-hmm. Where's the line? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And the judge goes, you know, into some detail saying that reference guides and encyclopedias are not always infringing. The key in this case, apparently, and I haven't read the lexicon that they were trying to publish either. It's obviously been enjoined now, so we may never get to see it in its full form. But the judge was moved by the fact that it didn't have quite enough commentary. And in fact, the argument wasn't that it was intended as literary criticism or commentary, but rather that it really was meant as a reference work. And the judge was troubled that it took a little too much. Instead of paraphrasing, it actually adopted verbatim phrases from the Harry Potter books. And, you know, the judge says that maybe the author was carried away by his enthusiasm as a fan for some of the clever turns of phrase that Ms. Rowling employed. But you didn't, you know, the judge said you didn't need to use those clever turns of phrase. You could have just paraphrased in a way that didn't copy quite as much. And so, again, I think this ruling doesn't say off limits for reference guides. It just says you can go a little too far, and that's what happened.
Thanks for the call, Joanna. Let's see if we can get this is Nick. Nick with us from Oklahoma City.
Hey.
Go ahead.
Good to be on air. My question was just how would this apply relating to products in the books, like they have butterbeer, pumpkin juice, foods like that? Would that ruling reach over to things like that? If, I don't know, say a chef wanted to come up with a great butter beer and sell it to a company and have them sell her drink?
Well, I've also seen they have the jelly beans with the all-flavored jelly beans.
They
do sell those. I've seen them on the market, but presumably that's with a marketing arrangement with the company, you would think, Fred?
I think that's right. That's actually a great question that crosses over from copyright, which is what we've been talking about so far, into the realm of trademark, which is really what protects brand names and products. So that's a very interesting question. If, of course, Warner Brothers or J.K. Rowling or whoever it is who's licensed to produce jelly beans, for example, is marketing jelly beans using the same names from the J.K. Rowling novels, that's a situation where that would be a trademark usage and you wouldn't want to be competing with them using their brand name. That would be off limits. But if you were to try to introduce a product from the books that just had never been put out there before, that's actually a mysterious question on the frontier of trademark law. It's not just about these books. There are some famous T-shirts and other products out there using the names of fictional companies from famous movies. And, you know, it's hard to know what to say about that. Copyright law does not protect those kinds of short one-word or two-word phrases. That, again, is the world of trademark law.
Nick, good question. Thank you. Let's see if we can go now to Stephanie. Stephanie with us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I have a question. This is about music, and I'm a real lover of all kinds of music, old rock and roll from the 50s, folk, blues. And, you know, one of the issues that always kind of really fascinated me about intellectual property was how do you determine wholesale appropriation? Like, I'm thinking, for example, of Chuck Berry suing the Beach Boys over...
Surfing USA.
Yeah, exactly. Versus, there's a lot, I would call it like a musical palette or a musical vocabulary for like a lot of folk and blues songs. They can sound real similar.
Yeah, but wasn't there the My Sweet Lord case, He's So Fine?
Yep, that's another one.
Yeah, Fred?
How do you make the distinctions between outright rip-off or wholesale rip-off and kind of going from the, you know, the...
Let's see if we can get an answer for Fred. We're running out of time.
Thank you. Okay.
That's really the core question behind the fair use doctrine, which is how this case was decided. And the judge specifically says he has to balance two things, the incentive to create original works. That's obviously what's driving Ms. Rowling to write these novels. But on the other hand, as the caller points out, the importance of allowing secondary follow-on creators to quote or comment on, or, you know, anybody who's a fan of jazz music knows that a lot of creativity is built on the shoulders of the creators that came before. And so the law has this fair use concept to try to arbitrate that line. The risky thing about it, of course, is not many people want to risk going to court over it and spending the money on lawyers to get the answer. This was a case, again, where folks did go to court. The Lexicon was actually represented for free by a law school here in California. And in the end, the judge found that they just went a little too far. And so apropos to the caller's question, that shouldn't lead people to think you're never allowed to quote, a Cole Porter piece in a jazz solo.
And since the book was never published, the penalty was only about $7,000, which is about 30 seconds of book sales. So
that's right. But I also should emphasize the Lexicon was taken from an online free website. And that is still there. So the content, the material that this was drawn from is there, and J.K. Rowling has said she has no objection to the free website.
Fred Lohman, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
Fred Von Lohman, a senior staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, with us today from KQED, our member station in San Francisco. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.